Hi, I'm Jodie Walmsley, author, keynote speaker, and happiness expert. I'm talking to you today from the Simply Laughter Online Summit. My next guest is Diane Kichijutsu, and she's going to be talking to us all about her journey with Japanese storytelling, Rakujo, and also about how to laugh in times of turmoil. She talks about her journey with the tsunami that happened in Japan and dealing with that, and then also her wonderful work that she's doing on cruise ships. Enjoy this wonderful session. Hi, Diane. How are you doing?
Fantastic. How are you?
I am great. You look awesome.
Thank you.
Yeah.
The occasion.
I see that. Now, the outfit is a giveaway, but where are you talking to me from today?
I'm in Japan.
And it's really funny because you and I actually crossed paths about how many, 25 something years ago?
Exactly, yeah. And I'm still here.
I can't believe that. That's awesome. That just shows you what a small world. And now we're reunited through laughter.
It's funny, isn't it? Yay.
It is. So now tell us a little bit about your story and your journey with laughter.
Well, I came to Japan as a backpacker, so I'd been kind of drifting around the world for a couple of years with no plan, just keep going till I run out of money and have to go home. I met a girl in, I was working in a ski resort in New Zealand and met a girl who suggested coming to Japan, but I'd been told don't go to Japan, it's expensive for backpackers. So I carried on with my journey and I met up with her again in Thailand like 6 months later, and she said go to Japan, you'll love it. So I just hitchhiked around Japan and fell in love with it. Just started studying traditional Japanese culture because I was a graphic designer in England, so studied pottery and flower arrangement, tea ceremony, got my teacher's license for tea ceremony and flower arrangement. And then I was introduced to an event producer who wanted me to do balloon shows. So I ended up becoming a balloon artist, which kind of started from nothing. And I just suddenly got all these job requests. So I had gone to Costa Rica to do a homestay and heard about a balloon convention in America. So I hopped over there to study balloons and my whole world exploded. So I suddenly became an entertainer with no background whatsoever in entertainment, doing a lot of kids shows. But it works out really well because the children in Japan all have to study English now. So if I use balloons, then it's let's learn English through balloons. So I was working as a balloon artist. And then I was introduced to a very famous storyteller who does very traditional Japanese storytelling, which is called Rakugo. And it's got a really long history. It started about 400 years ago. And it's basically a world of imagination. So you take people on a little imaginary journey through your stories. And he was the first Japanese person to start performing in English. And his English teacher was a friend of mine who just called me up and said he's looking for a stage assistant for his storytelling show. Can you do it? And I'd never seen it before, this art form. And I said, I've never seen it. I'll probably mess it up. He said, no, it's fine. You get to wear kimono and go on stage. And I said, okay, I'll do it. That was it. I was sold on the kimono part.
That's awesome.
Because at the time, I didn't have any kimonos. Now I've got almost 400. So upstairs, I've got a whole room for kimonos. And I just started being his stage assistant for some events and fell in love with the art form and decided to go to school and study it. And then it took me on a whole other journey, a whole new path that I never saw coming. Yeah.
It certainly did, didn't it? And I mean, the culture and everything in Japan is so rich and wow. It's great that you've taken the time to get into that. Now, you told me a little bit about how laughter got you, you know, through a really difficult time. Can we touch on that?
Yeah. It was, I was already doing the balloon shows and the Rakugo. Everything was going great. And then in 2011, at the end of 2010, my mum got sick and suddenly needed heart surgery. It was pretty pretty serious situation. So I went back home, cancelled all my jobs and went back home. And she had the surgery and she's fine now, thank goodness. But I was home and it was a very stressful situation. And then I got back to Japan, going, okay, that's it, I'm going to work again now, you know, ready for more shows. And then Japan, the north part of Japan, was hit by the tsunami, as you know, the earthquake and tsunami. And so all of my jobs cancelled. I was actually at home when it happened. My house was shaking. And I wondered where the epicenter was. And I looked it up. Actually, I put a message on Facebook. And someone said, it's up in the northern part of Japan, Tohoku, which is so far from my house. I couldn't believe that my house was shaking. So I put the news on and I watched the whole thing unfold live. And I had actually just come back from doing a Rakugo tour in that area. So I was panicking because all the names of the places that I'd just visited were all on the news. And I was trying to contact people, phone them, and I couldn't get hold of anybody. And then from the day after, my phone started ringing and all my jobs cancelled. All my events from March until summer were just cancelled. Nobody was doing an event, which was very understandable. But suddenly I had a massive free time and a really big amount of free time. So I thought, well, I'm just one person. There's not a lot I can do. But if there's anything I can do to help, then I'd love to do it. And as an entertainer, I thought I'd love to go up there and try to entertain people, because a lot of messages were coming back from people that everyone was so stressed out and it was such a dramatic situation. And the thing that concerned me the most actually was while I was watching the TV news reports, I could see everybody in the evacuation centers. And of course, nobody was laughing and nobody was smiling. It was just such a terrible situation. But the thing that bothered me was the children's expression. The children were just absorbing the adult stress and none of the children were smiling and they didn't have a sparkle in their eyes. And I think that's super unhealthy. And I'm a kids entertainer anyway. So it kind of just made me cry. I was like, the kids can't go through that. They really have no escape because they've got 800 people living in one gymnasium in a school. Nobody's got any privacy. You've got nowhere to go. The school has now become an evacuation center, so they don't have any lessons and they've lost everything. And I just happened to be going to visit my friend in hospital. She was going through cancer treatment. And she said, oh, a friend of mine has a company and they're doing charity events to make money for the people up in the evacuation centers. Would you mind doing a show for them? And I said, no, of course not. So I went to meet those people I said, I'll do the charity event for you for sure when I get back, but I'm just going to go up north and see if I can do anything before that. And they said, oh, we've got a group of volunteers up there. Why don't you contact them and you can join their group? So I just went by myself. I took 2,000 balloons and some colorful costumes, put them in my backpack, and I went up north. I didn't have a plan. I didn't have anywhere to stay, and I just thought, I'll work it out. I'm a backpacker. It'll sort itself out. And then when I arrived, one of the volunteers actually came to the airport to pick me up and introduced me to the other volunteers. There were people from all over Japan. There were about 100 people, and they gave me a tent and sleeping bag. And we all would just cook food during the day, and we'd wake up super early, 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning, and go around all the evacuation centers. We had a lot of different cars delivering food and clothing and anything, toiletries, medication, anything that anybody needed. And we would deliver it to all the different evacuation centers. And if any kids came out, then I would pull out the balloons so that while the parents were busy doing what they needed to do, I could entertain the children and they would know they were in a safe place. And if there was a space in the evacuation center on the stage, then we would just make a little space and I would do a storytelling session. So I was actually a little bit, before I went, I was a bit concerned. I thought, is this appropriate to go up there and do comedy? But that was the whole point of going. My theme was sharing smiles in Tohoku. That was the concept behind the trip, just to get people to smile. Because I thought, even if you just smile for like 5 minutes, 10 minutes. If you have just a bit of laughter for, you know, 15 minutes, it can change the way you feel. So that was why I went up there. And I was so happy to see that people actually laughed, even though they lost everything. And I think it was just a stress release. You know, there was no opportunity to laugh. Everybody in there, hundreds and hundreds of people, are all lying right next to each other like sardines. And it's difficult to release stress because you couldn't complain about your situation because everyone had the same situation. It probably would have been awkward for them to laugh because people would be, what are you laughing at? It's like nothing to laugh at. But when I arrived, it gave them something to laugh at. And also there was no color when I first arrived. Everything was gray. There were no flowers. The trees had gone, the grass had gone. Everything was gray and smelled like fish. So I would make a really colorful balloon hat in the morning, over the top balloon hat. And I took some crazy colorful costumes and really bright kimonos just to bring a bit of color. And after the show, I would just stay there. I didn't leave straight away. I just stayed there because I thought people probably want to unload. And it was amazing how many people actually laughed during the performance and then came over at the end and just hugged me. They didn't say anything. They would just give me hugs, which in Japan is not really typical, especially for the older generation. The younger generation hugged, but the older generation would just bow normally. So I was really amazed to see how many people were coming over and just hugging me. And they would bring me like a sweet or like a, you know, a biscuit or something. Everybody was taking care of me, making sure I was okay. And I would just sit and talk to them. And I realized that a lot of people didn't really need entertainment. They enjoyed it, but what they really needed was for someone to just sit and listen to them. And a lot of people told me really personal stories, which surprised me, because that wasn't why I went there. But I did realize that I'd become a little bit of a sponge. And because I was a neutral character, it wasn't awkward for them. And being a foreigner as well probably made it easier as well. And people would just sit and tell me their problems and tell me what they were stressing about. And we would have a laugh. And I kept it very light as much as possible. But I met so many amazing people there. It just blew my mind how strong some people are. And to still hold on to the ability to be able to laugh in that situation. I thought most people wouldn't even be able to stand up in the morning. They wouldn't be able to get out of bed. I've lost everything and have to start again. But these people would get up in the morning and clean the evacuation centers. And I met so many amazing people. I met a little boy in one center, and it was Children's Day in Golden Week, which is in May, because I was going back and forth. And on one visit, I hooked up with some local entertainers and some friends of mine from Osaka, and they brought their musical instruments, and I had my balloons and spinning plates, and we would dress up and go around the centers, and we would play songs, and we'd get people up to dance, and we had all our musical instruments, and I would make balloons and hats and things. And there was one little boy, I'll never forget him, he was about 10, probably 10 or 12 years old, and he was filming everything and taking photographs on his phone. And at the end, a friend of mine and I went over and talked to him, and we said, oh, do you want to be a photographer in the future, or a cameraman? You were like taking a lot of photos. And he said, no, it's just that I'm really, really happy now, and I'm having a great time, and I'm laughing, and it's really fun. He said, I'm really enjoying myself. He said, but after you've all left and it gets dark at night, he said, I'm going to get really, really sad again. And he said, so I've got everything here. So when I start to feel sad, I'm just going to get my phone out and I'll be able to cheer myself up. And I almost fell over because I thought, he's so mature for such a young child to know already that he needs like a technique to be able to cheer himself up again when he gets down. And he already had the plan. He's storing the pictures there so that he can cheer himself up. It was amazing. I couldn't believe it. So, I learned a lot from people. Another lady I met, she was probably about 80 years old. And we met her on one of our early visits. And she'd lost everything. So we had a lot of clothes. And all the clothes would be in boxes, ladies' clothes, children's age. We'd just write it on the boxes. And people would go and take what they want. Never too much, just take just what they need and then move on, and the next people would come along. And she picked out some outfits, and we helped her to pick out her outfits, you know, and she was like, does this match with this, does this go with this, and am I too old for this? And she was so cute and so funny. And then a few days later, we were actually driving down the street through the same city, same town. And we saw the lady on the corner of the street. So we stopped the car and opened the window. And she said, "Oh, do you remember me?" And we said, "Yeah, we did." She said, "Everything I'm wearing came from you." Came from, you know, clothes that we brought with us. And she did a little fashion show for us, and she was twirling and she was dancing and singing. And I thought, oh, she's fine. She's already taken the step to recovery because she's laughing. She knows there's nothing she can do about it. The situation's not going to change. So she's just decided to be positive about it. So I just met so many characters like that up there that when I came back to Osaka, if ever I had a drama or anything going on, stressful situation, I would just remember those people that I met up there and thought, my problems are like this tiny. They're not even worth worrying about. The people up there have got a massive problem ahead of them, you know, for the future. What are they going to do? Where are they going to live? They've lost their jobs. They've lost everything. And yet they're able to stay cheerful and laugh. So every time I got stressed out or anything, I would think of the people I met up there and go, you'll be fine. You're just going to get over it. Just forget about it. So it was a really good learning experience. It was a life-changing situation to be up there. And so I was up there, as I say, until basically summer, coming and going back and forth. And then I had started to get strange messages from someone, some emails from someone. I know where you live and I'm watching you. And it was a stalker who was sending me emails. And I didn't know whether it was true or not, but it was still quite stressful. Not long after that, my computer got hacked. All my files, all my folders, everything I've stored for like 15 years was just deleted. And my contacts list had gone. Well, I didn't know at the time because he changed the password, so I couldn't get in, but I couldn't access any of my contacts. And what he'd done is he'd sent an email to 3,000 people saying, oh, I'm in Spain and my bag's been stolen. I can't get back to Japan. I can't get home. Can you send $2,000 to this bank account? And it wasn't me, obviously. I was still here in Japan. So then I had to contact everybody that I knew and tell them not to send money. Extremely stressful because I didn't have any email addresses now because everything had gone. I'd lost all my data, all my folders. Everything had just been wiped. I couldn't actually get in. So I had nothing. The Japanese cyber police were fantastic. They eventually got me the account back, but it was blank. There was nothing there. Everything had bounced to another account. So I was really stressed out because all my jobs that were coming in, I couldn't open them. So finally, my jobs had started to come back. I was like about to start the next chapter, and I couldn't get any of my emails. And the phone was ringing 24/7 because all the people who thought I was in Spain were calling me on European time. All the people who thought I was in Japan were calling me on Japan time. I had three phones at the time. They were going 24/7. I couldn't sleep. I couldn't eat. I couldn't focus. And for about 2 weeks, I really didn't sleep. And I barely ate anything. And I noticed in the mirror, I was like, it doesn't even look like me. I can't even remember the last time I laughed. And my friends also started to notice. This is when I started to get concerned about it. They said, you don't even look like you. We don't recognize you. You're usually laughing and easygoing, and you just look like a different person. And I felt it. I just felt exhausted. And I thought, I need something. I need something to just pull me out, you know. I started to get paranoid because I had another stalker then after that every night phoning me for some reason, and the phone would just ring every single night. So the police would come into my house every single day to check I was okay. And so I was stressed to the max, and I knew it. And I was thinking, I've got to do something. I've got to do something. And then my dad called me, and he said, your mum has to have surgery again. Can you come home? So then I had to change all my schedule up again for the jobs that I did actually have, and went back home again. But by then I didn't have an email address, and people who thought that my phone had gone were not calling me on my phone because they thought it, you know, my phone had been stolen, which was what the scam mail said. And I went home, and I was just so stressed out, and I thought, I really, really need something. And I got back to Japan, and one of the men who had been taking me around the evacuation centers, after the tsunami. His brother had unfortunately died in the tsunami. He'd introduced me to all of his family and the local mayor and people that would organize the shows for me in the centers. And he said, I'm releasing a book about what happened up there and you're in the book. So would you mind coming to Tokyo and doing a Rakugo performance? Because we don't want it to be a heavy event where everybody's all depressed and crying. We want it to be a realistic event, but we want to keep it light. So I went up there to do a show. And at the end, we had a party afterwards. And I was sitting next to a Japanese man and we did a business card exchange, typical Japanese style. And he gave me his card and it said Laughter Yoga Instructor. And I went, oh, and I'd heard about it because when I was in Germany, a friend of mine had done the course. She'd done the Laughter. I'm not sure if she'd done a leader course or a teacher course, but she told me about it in Germany and she said, you should do Laughter Yoga. You do balloons, you do storytelling. It's perfect. It will complement it. And so that was in my head. Then another friend from Europe had sent me a YouTube link saying, oh, look at this. There's this thing called Laughter Yoga. Some people were doing it in Europe. You should do it. And then after that, I put the TV on and CNN had a thing on Laughter Yoga with people in Greece who were all going through a hard time with the economy and they were doing Laughter Yoga to release stress. And I thought, you know, this is not a coincidence. This is the fourth message that's come at me. So he said, the fella I met at the party said, yep, take yourself over to India, study Laughter Yoga, it'll be perfect. So I was so ready to go and I booked my flight, booked everything, didn't book any jobs in. And then my Indian visa didn't come through and I couldn't go. I lost it. So then I'm like, okay, just laugh it off. You're not going. So then I decided to go the next year. And right before I had everything booked again, and right before I had to have surgery. So I went back to England and I was in the hospital. But I'd already booked it. And I thought, no, this is the second year. I can't not go. And all my family was like, you can't go to India after surgery. So I came back to Japan in a wheelchair. And I was back in Japan for about a week. And then I went to India. And that's when I did the teacher training course. And as soon as I got there, I thought, this is it. I'm here. Nobody is happier than I am right now that I actually made it.
Wow, that's amazing. I mean, that's just, you know, I love the way that you already knew about laughter. It was just happening naturally. And well, then
it fitted in really well because what I do anyway is my jobs are to make people laugh. That's my job is entertainment. So it was just, it fitted in really, really well. It was like that jigsaw piece, you know, that you just went, oh, it's done.
No, that's awesome. And it's funny you talk about the visa thing because I had the same thing. I'd already done my laughter leader and teacher somewhere else, but I really wanted to meet Dr. Kataria. And I told him I'm coming. I'm so excited. And then because I was in Dubai, I couldn't get a visa because I was not resident. And so I had the same thing. And then Dr. Kataria said, it'll happen when the time is right, Jodie, don't worry. And it happened like 2-3 years after, but I'm so happy.
Oh, okay. So exactly the same as me.
It's weird. So I think things have to happen at the right time. So the main thing is you did it.
Yes, I did it. And the people I met on my course were fantastic. So I thought, well, it was meant to be here. Maybe these are the group of people. This was the group that I was supposed to do it with. So, yeah.
Exactly. Now, I mean, you've talked a lot about, you know, how you started. You're an entertainer and you carried on. And then, you know, how did you actually incorporate laughter yoga into your business?
Well, because I already have a platform and I already have a vehicle, at the end of my shows, most of my shows are about 90 minutes. So I do the introduction to what the storytelling is, and then I do a story, and then I usually do a slideshow based on whatever theme they request. It can be anything about keeping traditional culture alive. It could be about interacting with foreigners, whatever the topic is. So I do the slideshow, and at the end, I finish now with laughter yoga. So I've added it to the end of all of my shows so that the last thing the audience does before they leave is have a massive laughter session, and then they all leave laughing.
Well, I love the fact that you took what you were doing and that you were good at, and then you found laughter yoga and you integrated it. Now, what advice would you give to the people out there in doing something similar?
Well, I think if you have something, an art form that you're already taking to people, then you could always add to it. But I think a lot of the time, what I've noticed with other people who are doing laughter yoga, they start with laughter yoga and they don't actually realize they have a skill, another skill. But through doing laughter yoga, it pulls out maybe their ability to sing, or maybe they're very good at getting people up to dance and they haven't been aware of that. I think it sparks something in people. It's a confidence booster for sure, because if you're in front of a lot of people and you get everybody, the whole room laughing, it's like, I just got the whole room laughing. That's amazing. So you have a power. That's one thing, that a talent that you have that you maybe never knew you had. But also singing, dancing, instruments, using laughter yoga. A lot of people then start to look into the effects of laughter. They start to study more and have more information to back up maybe seminars that they're going to start to do. So I think a lot of people start from a different starting point. I already had a platform, so it's very easy for me. I've already got hundreds of people in the theater. There you go. I don't have to get people in. So I was lucky. They're already there. They're waiting for me, and then just get them involved at the end. And a lot of people then contact me afterwards and say, can you do a session of just laughter yoga for a group of care workers? So I will go there and do some classes with care workers. And then you'll find somebody there who actually is the perfect person to keep it going. And maybe they were painfully shy, actually, but they suddenly found their comfort zone. It's like, oh, I didn't know that I could stand up in front of all these people and get everybody up to sing and dance. They've discovered something new as well that they didn't know was hidden in them. So I think it is finding something that you love and you've got a passion for. And when you enjoy something, people enjoy it with you most of the time. I find like I really love performing. I never knew. I was so shy when I was in high school. If I'd ever had to get up in school and read like one line out of a textbook, I would have fainted. I would have just had to take it out on a stretcher because I couldn't do anything like that. My knees would be knocking and I couldn't do it. And now I do 2-hour shows and I don't even think about it. So I think just finding something that you love, and then there's a passion there. And the more you do something, the more you improve. And you do find things that you didn't think you were capable of. So for me, for seminars, I never thought I'd be able to stand up and do a talk. I was okay with the comedy side because I've always loved playing a clown. You know, I used to dress up at home and do mini concerts in front of my family and friends, never in front of people I didn't know. Yeah, I think, I found that I had a message. And when you find yourself with a message that you want to hand over, you can do it.
Well, I really resonate with that, because as you know, when we met 25 years ago, I was a professional dancer. I was performing around the world. I was on stage. I was comfortable. That's where I wanted to be. And it's great. But me too, I could never speak in front of people. And through laughter, you know, obviously I got injured. I had to stop dancing, stop performing. And I missed that, because that is who I am. I mean, I've always been, and I really missed it. So then learning laughter yoga did boost my confidence, got me out there. And now that's what I'm doing, is I'm speaking and I'm back on stage. So I love it.
Exactly. And I see that little spark going on in people, actually. At the beginning, when I start a session, you have those hesitant people who are just kind of, I think I want to leave, I'm not sure, but I'm going to sit here. And you see that spark go off partway through the session, where they're just into it. And they suddenly become the liveliest person in the group. And you're like, wow. You see it happen. You know, the people who were at the shyest at the beginning often end up being the most energetic when it gets to the end. So I think it just has to spark something.
No, it's and awesome.
Laughter is natural. I mean, it's not a difficult thing. It's not it's not something that people are not capable of unless you've got a skill or a talent. We can all laugh.
Yeah.
You just need to be able to pull it out of people. Some people just need a little bit.
And it really does, doesn't it? It gets them to relax and go through, you know, get to a place of relaxing and bringing out that confidence. It helped me with my confidence, and, you know, that's great. So now, I mean, you reach loads of people at once. I mean, what is the size of your audience usually?
Theatre shows, probably about 300 to 500, 600 people. Sometimes I have 1,000 people. My biggest has been 1,500 in one session. So you've got a huge room to deal with, which is great because then it's more contagious. If you've got thousands of people laughing together, it's very contagious. So
it is. I love it. And I also do big audiences. And I think it's very different. What is the difference between leading a class and then speaking to a bigger audience? Can you tell us the difference? Like doing a laughter leader course with a few people, like 20 people or so, and then actually being on stage. Can you tell us the difference?
For the laughter sessions that I do independently, I have a bigger time span, a longer time span. So I can take more time. For my laughter sessions during my regular show, they're usually about 15 minutes at the end of the show. So you have to think of how you're going to use that. The second problem I have in the theatre is everybody's sitting down. So they have to be exercises that people can do while they're sitting in their theatre seats. So that's different. I think depending on the age group that I have, I do in my own neighbourhood, I have a group of people and I can only meet them every so often because I don't have a regular life. So I can't guarantee being here every Wednesday or anything. So we just organize a day, and most of the people who come to that are probably like in their 80s, 90s. So that we do exercises sitting down. Some people have never, ever been exposed to laughter yoga. And in Japan, people don't typically laugh out loud. Mm-hmm. As you know, you've lived here. So people tend to like laugh quietly. And I did speak to someone the other day. It was very interesting. He was an elderly gent. And he said that in Japan, the men never used to laugh out loud. It was considered not cool. And so they didn't really laugh out loud. Even if they wanted to, they kind of kept it to themselves. And the ladies didn't show their teeth. It wasn't very polite to show their teeth. So they would just be like, So that's something that you have to work on a little bit in the beginning here to get people to be able to laugh right from the belly, you know, let it go. Once you've pulled that plug, they're okay.
Yeah, you know, and that's a good point because, I mean, you've done Japan, Southeast Asia, as well as you travel the world, but I was in the Middle East and there we have our culture. So it's very important, I think, for when you are actually performing in a country and you're doing a laughter session is to look up their cultures, because if you can refer to their culture and say, you know, I believe that this, it's not polite for you to show your teeth or something, but here we're going to feel safe. We're all here so that they do let go. I think that's really important.
I think a good sentence to always throw in that works is, this is kindergarten for adults, or this is kindergarten for everyone, because that's where people go, oh, okay, so anything's fine. There's no right and wrong about laughing. So here we are in a safe zone, so don't worry. Yeah. So I think once you give people the green light and say, it's okay, just go for it, just relax and feel free to break outside the boundaries of what you maybe wouldn't do normally in daily life. With the storytelling, it's the same thing. I have to understand the culture, because when I performed in Abu Dhabi and Dubai, they asked me not to talk about alcohol. Don't put the alcohol in the story. You know, in Japan, typically we're drinking sake in the stories. And they just say, just leave that out, maybe change the drink. It depends. So I check up on the cultures. In this country, this is okay. But in this country, maybe don't finish the story like this. Maybe change the punchline a little bit. So I also have to be aware of that before I start.
Yeah, do your research. I think that is very important.
Yeah, respect their culture as well. But keep it authentic as much as possible. For the storytelling, I want to introduce Japanese culture to them. So I don't want to bring it down to the skeleton. I try to keep as much of the story as I can to keep it authentic. And the same with laughter yoga. You can always find a way to bend it. If people are not comfortable touching, you know, male and female touching in certain areas, then just change how you do it.
That's exactly one that I would use, because, you know, there is in the Middle East no touching of male and female, and they're very, you know, they keep very distant. So what I start off with is something it's electric shock laughter to us, but I say this is the Middle East laughter, because you go as if to touch, but then you're not allowed to touch. So I'm showing that I know their culture, but I've adapted the laugh so that it fits to them, and then they find it funny.
Well, I think they appreciated the fact that you've actually made the effort to understand their culture as well. Like, yeah, in Japan, I mean, there are so many things that I've learned over the years, but then when I look back on things that I messed up in the beginning, I didn't know, and I did things, and afterwards I was like, oh, no. No, this is great to put into stories, because when you put it into comedy and people are laughing, then it's not offensive at all. It's like, what I did, show your own mistakes, show your own your own weaknesses or your own failures, and laugh at yourself. So it makes it easier for people to laugh with you then.
Yeah, that's very powerful. Now, as I said, you speak to bigger audiences and you don't always have the chance to have a club or something there. So what do you do in that case? Do you refer them, or what do you do?
Well, what I do is I introduce it and I explain what it's all about, the concept behind laughter yoga. And then we have a session and I give everybody homework. You've got to go away now. 10 to 15 minutes a day, continuous laughter. That's your homework. And I make sure everybody understands, and they're all like, yeah. And we do a little session of like, this is where you can do it. This is what you can do. And I always say as well, if you bump into other people, you know, tell them about it. And I say, but look for a laughter club in your own area. So all I'm doing is referring them. There'll probably be a laughter club in your area. So once you've put that little seed of interest in there, then those people that really want to continue will go and find a laughter club. If I'm somewhere where I know someone, then I can refer them. But because I'm traveling a lot, I'm overseas a lot, working on a ship, then I have people from all over the world in one place. So I can't refer anybody. I'll just say, look up a laughter club in your own area. And I've had a surprisingly large amount of emails and messages on Facebook saying, I found a club in my area and I'm going regularly now. So it was great, because they hadn't heard of it. I introduced it, just gave them enough to get them interested, and then they'll go off and follow up themselves. So at the moment, that's kind of what I am. I'm in the middle.
Yeah, but you're awesome, and it's similar to me, because we're both speakers and performers. We're not always in the same place. Like, for example, I was in Pakistan, and I do not have a club there. And there is a club, but actually I am going there now to train a few laughter leaders there so that they can start it. But I do the same thing. So, I mean, you're reaching thousands and thousands of people, which is awesome, and I really commend you for that. And what I definitely love is that you're passing it on and sharing the love so that other people around the world are benefiting, and people are actually going to go to those other clubs. So well done for that.
Yes, thank you. Yeah, I mean, it's always great to have a club of your own, so I'll do that. I'll do that as often as possible, but yeah, just push people in the right direction, get them excited.
Yeah, that's great. Now you mentioned briefly just about cruises. So what kind of work do you do on cruises?
I actually am hired as a guest entertainer. So I am booked as a storyteller, as a rakugo performer. That's a very traditional style. But that was really lucky as well. Just to have so many lucky coincidences, lucky meetings. I was on tour in America for a month, and I was doing rakugo shows around the States. And I did a performance in LA, and by coincidence, someone from head office of the cruise company was in the audience. And at the end of the performance, she came over and said, can you do the same show in Japanese? And I said, yeah. And she said, would you be interested in working on cruise ships? And I'd never worked on cruise ships before. Like maybe one event where I'd go on the ship, do a show and then leave. But I was a little bit hesitant at first, because I thought, oh, I might get cabin fever. I don't know whether I'm a little bit hyper. I'm not sure if I'll be okay on the ship. But I really, really enjoyed it. Really enjoyed it. So I'm hired only to do rakugo, but I always take balloons, because there will always be children on the ship. And I always dress in kimono. So for those special parties, like the captain's party and the champagne party, I always make a crazy balloon hat and I have my kimono on, go on parade. And then I said to them, do you mind if I do a laughter yoga session? And they said, oh no, we have a yoga teacher. And I said, no, it's not yoga, it's laughter yoga. And they're like, what is that? And I said, well, if you give me a space and a time slot, I'll just do it and then you'll know what it is. It's just laughter, kind of laughter therapy, laughter for good health, but we can get everybody laughing together. So they said, well, how many people do you think you'll get together? And I said, I don't know, if we get 10 to 20 people, we'll be fine. We can do a session. They said, okay, we'll put you in like the lounge area where they have some musicians playing usually. You can use that area. And they said, do you want to do them separately, Japanese and English? And I said, no. You know, laughter knows low language. We'll just do it all together. I'll do it bilingually so I can explain it in Japanese and English. And then all the laughter, you don't need a language for the laughter exercises. So they gave me a space and they put me in the program. And then when I turned up, there were like 300 people and we were crammed into this tiny, tiny space. And I was like, I didn't expect it. And I asked, thank you all for coming. How many of you have heard of laughter yoga? And almost nobody had heard of it, but they came out of curiosity. Because you're on a ship. Here we are, we're all on the middle of the sea. We may as well go to this laughter session. And it was crazy, like amazing. So then we have to move it then for the next time. We moved it to a bigger area with a stage and a big dance floor. And we got like 400 people. And then they would say, can you do it twice in the same cruise, because some people want to come and do a follow-up and some people who missed the first one want to come to the second one. So I really didn't expect it to be so huge. It's absolutely massive. So at the end of each session, I give people their homework, go away and laugh continuously for 10 to 15 minutes. And it's then the other thing that I want you to do is when you meet someone that you've met today in this room, in this session, don't say anything, but just start laughing. Because it's going to freak everybody else out who wasn't there. Because they're going to be like, what did we just miss? I could see people around the ship doing it. Just started laughing with people. And everyone is like, what? And then one of the cruise, the deputy cruise director was actually from one of the ships, was in Okinawa. And she was in Starbucks. She comes out with her coffee. And as she walks out of Starbucks, there's a big group of people. And they also... And they all just started laughing at her. She had no idea what was going on. And she's just looking down like, am I naked? Is this like my worst nightmare come true? And they thought she was me because she looks like me. She's my height, she's my build. We actually look quite similar. And so everybody had thought it was me. So they're all laughing at her. And she's like, I don't know whether to cry or laugh with you. I don't know what's going on. And then she cries. She's, you think I'm Diane, don't you? And they're like, oh, I'm not Diane.
Oh, I love that.
Anyway, so it doesn't matter because everyone's laughing. So.
You did your job well, though, because just to get people to laugh, it's awesome. I love it.
Well, it's great to see. Sometimes we'll have maybe an Australian man who's, you know, a rugby player or a footballer who's 6'5", and he's doing an exercise with a little grandma who's like 95, a little Japanese old lady who's probably up to his kneecaps, and they're doing exercises together, and it's fantastic. It's so funny to watch. And the language isn't a problem, because once I've given the explanation, they just go with it, and all their shyness is gone. And it makes it a good experience, a good memory for them, that on the ship, you know, they met all these people from different countries. We all had this big experience together. We shared a moment. I get such a good response after that. At the end of the cruise, people always remember not just the storytelling, but the laughter as well. And I think it works perfectly.
I love it. I love the work that you're doing. It's awesome. And thank you so much. I know that you're busy. You're running around, you're touring, you're all over the place. So we managed to knuckle you down for the interview, and I thank you for that.
Yay! Thank you. Yay!
Yeah. And, you know, you really have given, I wanted to give people your story because I think, you know, it's great for people to encourage them to find what it is that they're good at and to incorporate laughter and then own that space. You know, like Rakugo is specifically Japanese. You've gone into such detail to learn about the culture, and it's something very unique. But everyone else can go out and find what is unique for them and make it their own.
Exactly. And maybe it's so deep inside you don't even know it exists. You just
absolutely. That's lovely. So thank you, Diane. Thank you so much for talking to me. Yay! Bye-bye. Bye.